Well, are scientists being muzzled by private clients and their own bosses? What restrictions should legitimately exist on those at the forefront of scientific research from speaking out? The Association of Scientists says its members are concerned about being prevented from speaking publicly, and some say they've even had their research tampered with. The association's holding its annual conference in Wellington today with the issue of scientists' freedom of expression the key issue. Last year, the Royal Society proposed a code of public engagement for scientists, which caused concern. The Association of Scientists surveyed its members subsequently, asking, among other things, whether any had been prevented from making public comment. President Nicola Gaston says the results were surprising and disturbing. 40% of those surveyed felt they'd been gagged because of management policy or concerns over losing funding. Other occurrences have caused the scientists concern, she says, such as the Ruatanifa irrigation project in Hawke's Bay, where scientists who gave evidence at hearings on the scheme had their integrity questioned. She says others have literally had their research tampered with.
Tampered with is in the sense of direct interference. We do have reports in that survey of managers asking people to rewrite their scientific reports. Perhaps not to completely change the conclusions of the science, but certainly to give a slightly different conclusion or recommendation. Those are generally anonymous accounts, so I can't point you to a specific situation. But I think what's very clear is also that people are shying away from doing the kinds of studies that might lead to unpopular outcomes.
That's a more insidious version of what I'm sure we'll talk about. But with that kind of direct request to manipulate a result or a report, is this happening within publicly funded science institutions? Where is this happening?
Yes, it is happening in those places. It is often not as direct as simply a person being asked or being required to change something. There might be a request to change the statements made in a particular report. But what can also happen is that there are multiple authors on a report. And so if you have multiple authors, it might mean that some of them are more prepared to frame the conclusions a particular way. And that already gives management a tool which says, well, we can choose the author of the report, in some sense, who is most prepared to write the conclusions of the report in a particular way. So there have also been accounts of people's names being taken off scientific reports because they were not prepared to sign up to the conclusions that were required or requested, desired, let's say.
And they weren't given any kind of a minority report option?
In general, that can happen, but it certainly isn't a necessary option.
Without wanting to identify anyone, in what kind of research is this happening? I'm trying to get to the motivation of someone wanting to get a particular result and the scientists therefore being, you know, kind of herded to that conclusion. In what kind of research or what kind of work setting?
I think we're thinking about work that is generally directly commercially funded, but not necessarily. It could also be work that is government funded but on a subject matter with which an institution or a research grouping, I suppose, has a commercial relationship with a sector.
And if we were looking at the motivation, is it to get a more positive result, the viability of something, say, or how serious a problem might be, mitigating how serious a problem might be, in order what, to keep a funding stream going or that kind of thing?
That is the natural kind of conclusion. Those would be exactly the right conclusions that I would draw from the comments and the reports that we've had.
What other kinds of issues are you finding that scientists are raising, particularly about being muzzled or being gagged?
Well, it's interesting that some of it is direct pressure from management. Some of it is specific to the Crown Research Institutes in the sense that they have communications policies that directly explicitly restrain scientists from speaking out. Some of it's a little bit more indirect and humorous. We had a university scientist report that he was just heading into television to do a live interview on a subject, and he had a phone call from his vice-chancellor, which he then declined to take because of not being sure what the vice-chancellor's interest in the interview might be. And so there are sort of more humorous accounts, but there is a constant message across all of the science sector of pressures, and not necessarily always top-down pressures, but often peer pressure. Often disapproval or concern from colleagues that you might be sticking your neck out too far by speaking up on a particular issue.
This is across the what we might call the publicly funded sector, so the Crown Research Institutes, the universities themselves that are supposed to be that bastion of independent thought and debate.
Yes, well, I think this is really concerning because the government scientists and their ability to speak out, we've seen that come under threat in other countries. So Canada, it must be a couple of years ago that they put heavy restrictions on the ability of their scientists to speak out. That's still in place. The UK actually just 3 weeks ago changed their civil service code. So in the UK now there are clear restrictions on the ability of anybody and the civil service to speak out publicly. They actually need to get direct ministerial approval before speaking to media on a particular issue. And so the Science Media Centre in the UK has come out very strongly against this, and it's highly critical because the turnaround times for any kind of approval to be granted simply mean that scientists aren't going to be given the opportunity to comment on an issue where somebody with a vested interest in the matter's probably going to be very willing and keen to be heard. So there's a clear imbalance in the ability of people to speak out that comes through that scenario. But I think more than just the restrictions on government scientists, it's this culture of fear, of critique almost, that we're seeing, which applies to the universities as well, that scientists are afraid to speak out, sometimes just because they're too worried about being wrong. And that's actually quite a strange thing for a scientist, because we need to dare to be wrong all the time.
The whole point is to find out whether you're right or wrong with your hypothesis.
Yes.
That's what you're supposed to be doing.
And so I think a lot of this comes from some messaging around the need to be an expert before you can speak out, and even not to just be an expert, but to be the expert on a particular issue. And the reason that concerns me is that some of these messages really seem to maybe not be aimed at discouraging, but effectively discourage younger scientists and scientists coming through with newer results. And I think that really damages the ability of science as a whole to communicate what's changing in science and the newer developments that are happening.
The Earth would still be flat if someone hadn't been able to challenge it.
Yes.
When we talk about the public muzzling and gagging, though, and you mentioned people with vested interest or commercial interest very keen to speak on an issue. So we could be talking about obesity and, you know, the factors leading into obesity and food supply and all these kinds of things. We could be in the endless debate about climate change. We could be talking about really hard facts surrounding things like earthquake risk, for example.
Yep.
And let's talk about some of the concerns about the code of ethics that was the subject of some debate last year. And this idea that the voice is able to speak in it after an event like that might be limited.
Yes.
What has happened over the weeks and months of debate about that code?
Well, the code itself has been slowed down. The Royal Society has looked at it and decided that they need to go out to the community and consult quite widely on that. We're actually expecting to hear at today's conference about what the current situation of that project is. So that should be part of the discussion, which will be very useful. But it's clear that that's not the only issue we have. I mean, you mentioned that earthquake communications, for example, which is an interesting one, because the idea I can understand from one point of view is that if you have a single line of communication, then you're not going to have people unnecessarily concerned or confused about what the truth is and what they should be doing. And so you want to make sure that there is an official source of scientifically valid information that is going out to people in such a situation. And so I think I've got some sympathy for that view. I think that's quite reasonable. You do want a good line of official communication. But the idea that that should prevent other people with expertise from communicating issues around those direct politically interesting recommendations, I think that's strange.
The problem with the official line is whether, number one, whether it is scientifically valid or whether it is the reality that there will be contested and competing views and people ought to be informed.
Yes.
And second, who controls the single voice?
That's a very, very good question. And the reality is that it seems very likely that that would always come under some form of direct government control.
Is that a common theme from the research and the soundings that you're doing? Because another subject we've discussed with another scientist in the past has been the Prime Minister's prizes for science, which on the one hand are welcomed, you know, a funding stream. Mm. On the other hand, questions are then asked about which subjects are chosen.
Mm-hmm.
If they meet public policy and government policy objectives, that's well and good. But does it come at a cost to other drivers? Where does pure science sit in a scheme where possibly short-term policy objectives determine or might play a factor in decisions? I guess what I'm driving at, is there a concern among scientists about the way so much public funding is at risk of possible political imperatives?
Yes, I think that's very fair. I don't think the PM Science Prizes are the most concerning aspect, because they're awards for science that's already been done, and as I understand it, they're all decided upon by a panel of quite independent people. I don't think the Prime Minister himself has any involvement in selecting those people. But the amount of, or the extent to which there is any ministerial direction of where science funding goes, is very concerning. And I mean, just a simple example of how perceptions around that are changing is that until a few years ago, it was absolutely unheard of for the Minister of Science to want to announce the results of the Marsden grants, for example. So that's one of our big pure science funding streams. It's not our biggest funding stream by any measure, but it's the one that still supports basic funding, basic science, quite directly. And in the last few years, it's become apparent that the minister really wants to take ownership of this, in a sense. And this is from a communications point of view, such as the Prime Minister's Science Prize, is nice in the sense that it does show that there's some recognition of the value of science. But the extent to which this is now a minister's announcement of who is actually being funded almost implies that the minister has a role in choosing who gets funded. And that perception, even though it remains, I think, a very weak perception, and it certainly isn't the truth, I think is a very dangerous perception.
We're talking about the independent scientific voice and protecting it, and clearly that is a complicating factor when you have public money going into science and equally commercial money going into science.
Yes.
How would you describe where we're sitting at the moment, re-protecting that independent scientific voice?
I think we're at a little bit of a crossroads, and I say that because of the extent to which things are happening overseas as much as in New Zealand, so the recent changes in the UK. There's also been a very interesting discussion happening in the United States around the Environmental Protection Agency, and there were two bills that went through the House of Representatives late last year, which actually preclude the appointment of scientific experts on the scientific panels of the Environmental Protection Agency on the basis that if you've done research into a particular area, you have an inherent conflict of interest. And so somebody who works for the oil industry, for example, might be seen as a more neutral voice on climate change issues than a climate scientist. And this is very scary. The White House has already said that they'll veto it, you know, because of all the various issues. But I think this politicisation of scientific issues and the extent to which scientists, individual scientists, are seen as potentially conflicted comes from a really strange, you know, in some ways I think it's a problem with the way scientists see themselves as much as anybody else's interpretation of science. I think there's this sort of dangerous fallacy in science that scientists are somehow particularly objective and therefore should never have a conflict of interest, and that if a scientist says something, you must trust them, it must be true. And the reality is that science is only objective because of all the processes that we have in place of requiring reproducibility, peer review. You know, we certainly want science to be objective. It's a scientific ideal. Science is designed to be objective by construction, because we have a particular process. None of that says that individual scientists are more objective than the average person.
But what you're pointing out is the process is the protection, and what
yes.
your focus is on
yes.
at this conference is the process being undermined.
Yes. And that's exactly what I think we need to focus on.
So with the Royal Society's proposed code, what happens now with that? It'll be part of the discussion undoubtedly this weekend. What are you saying about that?
I think that it's actually perhaps an opportunity if we get involved as scientists and say that the original conception of it was probably, well, was quite misguided, I think, but that actually there are issues in New Zealand in terms of the ability of scientists to speak out. A lot of those issues are to do with perceptions, to do with fears. They may not be due to direct pressure, but perhaps this conversation or this code can be reframed to actually put some protections in place for scientists who need those protections.
2 points. You actually want the Crown Research Institutes to sign up to the Code of Public Engagement.
Well, the Royal Society Code of Ethics, already exists.
Right.
The idea being that that protects the ability of scientists to speak out in the public interest.
Oh, right. So not the new proposal, yeah. The existing
Code of Ethics already states that scientists should adhere to certain levels of professionalism and ethical behaviour. And some of those are to represent scientific truth in an objective manner, to point out when the interpretation of the scientific results may not be entirely clear-cut, when there are alternative interpretations.
The very, very problem we started with, you are actually saying put an obligation on the scientists to speak up when they are being meddled with.
Yes.
Right, and then the public engagement code, what's going to happen with that in your view?
I don't think it's going to look anything like the original proposal.
Right. You want protection for whistleblowers?
Yes.
Where would that fit in?
I think we'll have to think about where that would need to come from. I don't think the Royal Society is well placed to enforce any such protections. This is the issue that they've had already with letters being sent to them about Ruatanifa, for example. So I think that actually needs to come from the Ministry, that there needs to be some involvement from them and some strategic thinking about, I guess, selection bias in our science system and what we need to do to have, to be producing objective quality science, what mechanisms we need to have in place.
How wide does your survey go, numbers-wise? Might ask for some statistical validity and reliability,
absolutely.
Please.
Absolutely. I'm just trying to remember the numbers. I'm afraid it's slipped my mind. I think we had about 400 responses,
right.
About a week.
And what percentage said they felt they'd had felt gagged in some way, either insidiously or directly, because of management policy or concern over funding?
I think the number that came out as a direct response to that said 40% of them. But many people replied no and then went on to say, but I have avoided being put in that situation, or but my research is not in an area that would lead to that kind of behaviour, but I've seen it happen to others.
That is the Association of Scientists, a spokesperson, president, in fact, Nicola Gaston, their big conference today. What interesting times indeed.